We saw 1,500 people give their lives to Jesus on that tour, 6-week tour, which, you know, is huge. And that feeling of being able to walk off stage and going, well, maybe the concert was okay, but wasn't that awesome? 40 people give their lives to God tonight.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. And if you get that magazine regularly, you will know one of our top star columnists is, of course, Rend Collective's Chris Llewellyn. Well, I'm not joined by Chris. I'm joined by some other members of Rend Collective today. I'm delighted to say that on the call right now, joining me from Nashville and Florida, they're in two separate places, but they're still on the call with me today, are Gareth and Ali Gykeson from Rend Collective. Gareth and Ali have been songwriters, part of the band. They've released books, they've been on podcasts, they've done all sorts of stuff, and I'm delighted to be delving into all of that and more with them on the show today. So Gareth and Ali, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We are separate places, but we're very much still together.
Thanks, Ali, for that clarification.
That is very important to clarify, absolutely. But if this isn't a 2021 interview, I don't know what is. We've got Gareth currently in an airport wearing a face mask, and yet here we are, thanks to the joys of Zoom. We should start by asking you guys, what are you finding joy in right now? Joy is a massive theme for you as a band and everything you're about. And sometimes, especially in a pandemic, it can be hard to find joy in many things. So what are you both currently taking joy in right now?
It's been a wonderful year for us to actually be in the one place for a long time, you know, just being together as a family, not being on the road. We're on the road probably about 150 days a year, and it can get very tiring. We've got three small young children, so it's been really nice actually just to be able to be at home together and enjoy each other and do like normal family things.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's been as much as it's been a difficult year in ways of not doing the normal routine, being consistent in the one place has been so different for us. It's almost been like this breath of fresh air, like this real rest that you didn't know you needed. And I've seen like the development of my kids' relationships really develop because you're like, well, these are your friends for the next year. This is who you've got. And so seeing them grow and really get along together and doing all those ordinary things. Never before were my kids able to go to a birthday party because we were never in town or never in the right place at the right time. And so even in the past few weeks, it's been like, yes, you can go to this birthday party. We are available.
I have to say, here in the UK, things haven't quite opened up yet. It sounds like things might be a bit more open in the USA where you're at. So tell me a little bit about what the regulations currently allow you to do and not do. Because for you as a band, touring is huge, right? I mean, that's your livelihood. And presumably a lot of that has been shut down. So are things beginning to open up now?
They aren't really opening up in terms of for shows. That's kind of something where we don't feel like we want to put anybody in harm's way. So there are other bands out playing concerts, but we've just kind of made the deal that that's not something we want to be a part of for now. And we know that touring is part of our livelihood, but we also know that God takes care of us and we're not worried about the finances. That's kind of in terms of like a bigger picture. In terms of a smaller picture thing, which when we're talking to our family back at home in the UK and Ireland, things are very, very locked down. We would have the ability and the privilege to go and, you know, go to a birthday party. Sometimes they're outside, you know, most of the time everybody's wearing masks. But even just to be together with people the last few months has been really great.
Yeah, like our schools have been back on and things for quite some time. I mean, the kids all wear masks, but they schools have been open, which I know I am so grateful for. That's a huge deal. And it's been very different over here compared to the UK, I would say.
So tell me a bit more about life in America, because as of course we all know already from the beautiful accents, you're not from America originally. You moved over there, and I'd love to chart some of the kind of success for you guys personally and for Rain Collective, because if we rewind the clock a little bit back to, I guess, from 2007 all the way through to today, you've gone from a small band in Northern Ireland to now known all over the world, selling quite literally millions of records and touring some huge stadiums, both in America and internationally. So really the progression for you guys and the change in life, the change in lifestyle must have been very dramatic from back in the days of Northern Ireland to now living in America. So do you want to take us back to the beginning and how it all began for you guys?
I bet it all began, Alec. It all began, we started in 2002, actually, as a like get together for people in their 20s and 30s who seemed frazzled by church. At that stage, there was a big sort of huge movement towards program based services were coming, maybe more entertainment focused rather than discipleship focused. And we wondered why all our friends were leaving church at the age of, 17, 18, 19. And we decided, well, we thought it was because they weren't obviously tasting real community. And like to follow Jesus is actually it's a cost. It costs you something. But if you give it out for free, then it's just treated lightly and it's not important. And so we just started Rand, which was that sort of get together for people in their 20s and 30s. We met once a week in a gym at 9 p.m. and just had an acoustic guitar, a couple of lamps, and we all sat on the floor. And then that grew, more and more. We started doing evangelism in our town, and then people started coming from all over the place. And then it was probably 6 years later, we thought we should probably write some music. Like, we had just been playing, Tim Hughes songs. We're like, we all played in a band that went round the bars in Northern Ireland and played like secular music, our own songs that we had written. And we thought maybe we need to translate this and bring the two worlds together. Started doing that and playing places. And then, the America thing opened up because Chris Tomlin emailed us, didn't he, Ali?
Yeah, I think Martin Smith had given him a copy of Organic Family Hymnal. And we had just started praying about going to America and whether that was the right step. Probably the quickest answer to prayer anyone's ever gotten, about 2 weeks later, we get an email from Chris Tomlin. Wow. Saying, hey, do you want to come on a national tour? And so, yeah, that was really the door opening. And from going around and doing all of those things, we got heavily involved in the Passion movement. We were going to Passion Church, was just setting up in Atlanta at the time. And we were there every week. So we would serve at the church, play shows with Chris during the week. And then, just kind of snowballed from there, really. People started trying to, we had to get a booking agent and manager, and because people were wanting to book us to come and play at all these different events. So it felt like the next couple of years, as well as writing music, well, we were just we were touring so much and just doing so many shows. And I remember the next few years just being in a state of exhaustion.
Well, we were sleeping on the floor. Like, there was no glitz or glam about it. We were sleeping on the floor of someone's house, or in a van. We had $60 a month as our pocket money. Was how much money, and that was up until probably five, six years ago.
So how does that work? Because for the rest of us looking on, we're like, okay, we're hearing you guys on Christian radio, we're seeing you, tens of thousands of followers on social media, you're getting all this airplay, your singles are being downloaded time and time again, and yet you're living off $60 a month. How does that work?
Well, that was 6 years ago. You kind of just had to pay your dues, go out, and all the money that we were making was going back into the machine of Rent Collective, to try and build it, to pay for touring costs, to do all those sorts of things. One of the tours that we did in 2012, we actually had to pay $1,000 a night to be allowed on the stage, you know, because it's big, you know, it's business over here as much as everything else, which is obviously a thing that we don't hugely love and try to live in the way that we feel most comfortable with it all. But and also, you know, the music industry's changed. I think everybody at home thinks we're now, you know, millionaires, but with the arrival of Spotify and all of that there, I would say music is becoming more of a blue collar job again. You know, it's you do it because you love it. You don't do it because it's the best way to make money.
Yeah.
There is many better ways to make money, but that's not why we started doing it. We started doing it because we felt called, you know, to do what we do.
And, you know, on that point, it's I think it's becoming more well known now that music streaming does not generate the kind of money needed for a lot of people to survive. But of course, for a long time, touring was better, at least. But with the arrival of COVID, that creates massive problems for any band, including you guys who are planning on touring. So what's that look like over the past year? You mentioned earlier, Gareth, that you know, you believe that God is going to provide for you and has provided for you. So how have you seen that for you guys as a couple in the past year, with something unexpected in a global pandemic, presumably drastically altering how you guys are making a living?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has. I don't think there's been anything we have done this year that has actually generated enough money to sustain us. But what we've seen is, as a band, we've kind of always lived with, you know, like, what do they call it? The purse strings. You know, the Northern Irish are like the Scottish in that. We like the, you know, defender pennies. So we've always just taken a salary, no matter what the money has come in. So that's kind of really worked to our advantage this year, where we had money and savings from the business. There's also, you know, a couple of grants from the US government and grants from the UK government, but nothing sustaining. So it's been, I don't know how it's all worked out. Royalties have come in at the right time. And, you know, people have been generous to us as well and thoughtful towards us. And that's been fantastic. We just started a Patreon recently. We have 200 Patreon subscribers, and they're just, you know, monthly people who give to the ministry, basically. And that's a huge help, and something for us that I think we took us so long to realize. We're not really a band. Like, we are more of a ministry. Like, we do things, and the bottom line, the financial implications aren't the thing that drives it. You know, we went to Australia last year, and we're like, are we going to break even? I don't know, but we need to go to Australia and do what God called us to do. And that kind of makes it more fun. I think there is an element of that, and that's something that the Patreon model's been really great for, people just being able to get behind the ministry and support us in that.
Yeah. So tell me a bit more about how you guys view this as a ministry, and some of the stories from people who have encountered your music or just come across you personally, and the impact, I suppose, that you as Wren Collective and you as individuals have had on people, that for you means this is not about music per se, this is about ministry and really helping people.
Yeah, I mean, we've come across people. That's one of the things I've missed most about touring, actually, is getting that face-to-face time with people and hearing how you've been part of their journey. And in ways, you know, when you come and you write a song, you just never imagine the impact that it's going to have on people's lives. You know, for us, we're thinking about worship, we're thinking about church sometimes, but also like a simple song like My Lighthouse. You know, we've seen it being played in prisons, in most primary schools across the UK. I think everyone's doing a mission week called My Lighthouse. It's all the theme.
My lighthouse, my lighthouse, shining in the darkness, I will follow you. Oh, my lighthouse, my lighthouse, I will trust the promise, you will carry me safe to shore.
Over this past year, been able to do these Zoom calls with certain fans that want to talk to us, and just hearing how we've been a part of people's story, whether they've been battling with health issues or marital issues or depression, all of these things, and to know that you are involved in their lives, and they've been using a song that you've written from a different place to connect them. It's really, really special. You know, it's a real moment of going, you instantly have these connections with people worldwide of going, I can relate to that. I understand where you're coming from. And thank you for letting us be a part of your journey. It's been really impactful. I feel like even on my life, you know, a lot of the times when you feel like, oh, it's, you know, the past year, like, oh, what are we, you know, I think everyone's done that. They've got, what am I doing with my life? Is this worthwhile? Like, what is this? And then being able to get back to that point of hearing people's stories is pretty amazing.
So we also, as a band, made the decision about 2 years ago that we would preach the gospel at all our concerts, which is not really something that a band does. You know, like you buy a ticket and you come for some worship, some entertainment, some sweat, you know, and feel good, and then you go home. And that was a big deal for us, that we just said, you know, this is something that we're passionate about, and it's kind of old school, you know, preaching the gospel. And so on our Canadian tour, which was just before COVID, so in the autumn of 2 years ago now, I'm trying to get the miles, because 2020 feels like it never happened. But we saw 1,500 people give their lives to Jesus on that tour, 6-week tour, which, you know, is huge. To be able to have that impact, not just from the music, but, you know, I would get up there and preach. And that feeling of being able to walk off stage and going, well, maybe the concert was okay, but wasn't that awesome? 40 people give their lives to God tonight. And we're like, yeah, that's something really special. We've just been trying to hone in on that side of our ministry as well. We've always felt like we're more a worship band for people who don't go to church than we are a worship band for people who love church. And, you know, another great example of that was whenever we were in Shepherd's Bush in London playing, and a girl behind the bar, just one of the bar staff, broke down in tears, and, you know, God met her there and then. And then one of our friends actually went over and started speaking to her, and she gave her life to God. And just a really cool moment, you know, where you can see the impact of what you do actually, you know, in a touring capacity as well.
Yeah. It's always struck me, I have to say, I've followed your career from the beginning. It's always struck me that there is more to you guys as people than just the music. And right. I don't mean that to disparage other bands, but I've met other musicians and bands, and the music great, but, you know, you don't go to them for you know, anything more than that. Whereas for you guys, there's always been something more, whether it's preaching the gospel at your events, or even, I just think, what technology allows you to do now. You've just launched a new podcast. Where's the joy in that? Your social media feeds are very active, and yeah, it's fun, and yeah, it's about the music, but it is deeper than that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, you want something. I think music isn't enough for any of us. We all like to feel like we're called to do something. When we started, we always said we were musicianaries, you know, which is missionaries and musicians together kind of at once. And that's kind of been our heartbeat. And trying to, you know, there's times we've veered off that, times we've forgotten that. Just trying to come back to that centered reason why we started what we do was to actually be a dynamic force for change, and for people who feel like they're the outsiders to know that there is a place in the gospel.
Yeah. Ali, question for you. I'm aware the music world, and to a certain extent the Christian world, can be quite male dominated. I don't know if you would agree with that, if you've had any experiences of that, and if you have any thoughts on that for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I remember I have done so many tours where I've either been the only girl on stage for the entire evening, or, I mean, I've toured on tour buses full of men for the past 10 years. You know, it's
that must be a smelly experience.
It's a very smelly experience. And I would say, for me, when I was sort of starting into the worship world, what I normally saw growing up in church was, like, if women were on stage, they were singing in the background, or maybe even singing, but it was quite static. And for me, what I really wanted to bring to the worship world was not to be afraid to express yourself in it, maybe some strange ways. And when we were hearing, you know, I was picking up random instruments like playing trash cans and, you know, ukuleles and accordions. And I remember people like, what is this random girl doing? This Irish woman doing, just keeps picking up random things. But for me, it was like, let's bring that joy to worship. You know, let's not, you know, worship doesn't have to be this serious expression. It can, you can sing with a smile on your face, you can dance, you can move. Yeah, just take that freedom. And for me, I felt like that was a part of what I wanted to bring to the worship world, of like, don't be afraid to express your joy. You don't have to be ecstatic in the background. When we lead worship, I'm like, everyone on the stage is leading worship. It's not just Chris. It's not just the front. And so for me, it's been so important to try and connect with as many people in the audience or the congregation as I can and bring them on this journey. And that can be quite daunting. Are there people up there? And you know, there's a lot of things to think about, whether it's being what you're wearing or how you, you know, how you move. But I mean, I've noticed ever since we started that I can now see like all these other women rising up, and they're like, yes, go for it. You know, wow. You know, it's been great. It's been good.
That's amazing. I suppose there's an interesting tension there. On the one hand, you want to be a role model, don't you, for younger women coming up, but you almost don't want the pressure of that either, do you? And you're just yourself.
Yeah, well, I think there's a balance in that. And, you know, if you're like, you need, it's important to like push those limits a little bit and show people not to be afraid, you know. And I remember like Gareth handing me all things. We're going to play hand cymbals tonight. I'm like, girl, don't play hand cymbals on stage. What do you want me to do with that? And he was like, I don't know, make it look good. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I think, and I get so many comments and so many young women coming up to me and being like, thank you, you know, you've really shown me that I don't need to hold back, that, you know, I can be a girl drummer, or I can be, a girl playing the guitar or whatever it is. I don't just have to be having a microphone and a keyboard.
Holier than thou.
Radical.
Delusional.
Ignorant.
Perfect. It's time to challenge stereotypes about Christians, and Premier Christianity is leading the way.
Transform your perceptions, broaden your horizons, open your mind to wide-ranging views.
Read interviews with politicians, theologians, and TV presenters.
Discover the breadth of the Christian spectrum.
Be provoked, react, inspired, and informed. Get the print magazine and full online access for just £4.95 a month. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com.
Premier Christianity Magazine.
The bigger picture.
I was reading about your song, one of your songs, Counting Every Blessing. And you said, as a band, it emerged out of a time of kind of downheartedness, actually, collectively as a band. I wanted to ask you specifically, what was it that had got you down? Because the message of the song is very powerful, that there's always something to be thankful for. And I think that's a message that's really resonated with people, again, through COVID and the pandemic, that even in very dark times, you've always got blessings to count. But what was it for you that had brought you to that low point, and how did the song emerge out of that?
It's interesting, because I think what had happened before that was we had just brought out The Art of Celebration, and that record had gone huge for us worldwide. And then we had signed a new record deal with a different label, and they had kind of wanted us to bring out another record quite quickly. And Ali had said, I don't know why you're bringing out another record. This is stupid. You know, this other one's still selling, you know, thousands a week. Why would you be doing this? And I guess we listened to executives over our wives, which is always a mistake. the next record was a complete, well, not a complete flop, but a bit of a flop in comparison. And I remember all of us just feeling really downbeat. We had this, you know, euphoric sense of we're climbing, we're going high, we're going to take over the world. And then that sense of experiencing that flop and that sort of, you know, and now you realize a little bit of experience the music industry and all of that has its ups and downs. You know, you'll not hear from Carrie Job for 6 years and then she'll bring out The Blessing and then it's the biggest song ever. And then you'll not hear from Carrie Job for 6 years. And that, you know, that's kind of just the way it goes. But me especially, I was totally gutted. I felt like I had let the team down and I'd let God down and all of those things. And looking around at the success of other people, you know, which is always a dangerous thing to do. It's kind of why social media is the worst, because it's most of the time, hey, look at how much better my life is than yours. You know, a friend said to me, comparison is the thief of joy. And that kind of just really hit and resonated with me in a way that I don't think I'd really thought about it to the depths that I had. I mean, it's an easy phrase to say, but I tried to go on the journey of it and try to really listen to God on it. And the idea of counting every blessing came out of that moment. I started writing on the song. Chris and I started working on it. And I think when we had finished it, we had just realized we have literally so much to be thankful for. And both of us, Chris would say himself as well, you know, even over the last year, the idea of gratitude and keeping a note of gratitude is huge. It's so good for your mental health. It's so good for your spiritual health. When you realize that God has given us enough, and if we didn't have one more thing, we would still have enough. It's a really great place to get to. And also for my personality type, it's a great place to strive for more out of. I always want to do better. I always want to succeed more. I always want to accomplish more. But I want to do that out of a place of rest and knowing that I have everything I need rather than a place of like fight. I think that's the much healthier place to be in.
I'd love to talk a bit about family life for you guys because you started fairly recently Ren Collective Kids, and again, nothing but respect for you both. I've never quite understood how it works with touring and having children and babies. I just think, wow, how are those guys doing it? So give us a glimpse into what family life looks like for you, and also where this element of ministry is so important for you as a band. It's not just a band, but it's a ministry, and it's going into that whole world, I suppose, of kids worship.
Life with kids on the road is definitely busy and chaotic, and you have to let a lot of things go, you know, like sleep routines and, you know, bathing, lawn, you know. But it has been amazing. It's one of those things. It's quite unique. I don't really know anyone else who's done it like we've done it. And from the very beginning, we were like one in, all in. We're very much people of, you know, you don't stop your ministry to have kids. You just bring your kids along as much as you can. And that's what we've done. And it's been incredible. Like, I mean, our kids are just, Arthur asks all the time, he's our 7-year-old, when are we going back on the bus? When are we going back on tour? They've very much lived in community their whole lives and have really thrived on it. And also they've got to see what God has done around the nations and how God's moving in people's lives. And they've seen it up close and personal, you know, and that's something you can't really get any, you know. I'm just so grateful for it, I think. And as hard as it's been, and there's been lack of sleep, and there's been, you know, all the logistics of flying internationally with kids 4 times a year is like, ooh, everyone's always jet lagged somewhere. But it's been really incredible. And so, you know, when you're with your kids all the time, I would say I'm a full-time mom, but I'm also full-time in ministry, and it's all go. And people often ask me about balance, and I'm like, there's not balance. for me, I don't concentrate on trying to split my time and trying to be like a mom here and a minister here and whatever else. It's all in one. It's all encompassing. And I do think the moment that you try and get those two things to battle and to pull in opposite directions, you're in a losing match. And so you have to make sure you're always pulling in the same way, that your ministry and your marriage and your family life are all on the same side of Jesus, you know. So that's been really, really important. And then a few years ago, I mean, we were in the point where, like, if I have to listen to The Greatest Showman or Baby Shark one more time, I'm going to lose my mind. And, you know, Gareth and I are both really passionate about hanging out with our kids, and we would have dance parties on the bus before a show and all of these things. And yeah, we just thought it was time to write some fun kids' work. And it was great, because where you have maybe all these limitations in writing regular worship music, you can just do whatever the heck you want with kids' music. <You're> like, we can change time signatures. We can put random lyrics in. We can put pandas in this song. It's going to be fine. And so it turned out to be a really fun project. And we wanted it to be all encompassing of, like, let's not just give kids songs to listen to, but let's give them content to watch. You know, we all know how kids love watching screens and YouTube and all of that things. But we wanted to get some positive things that the whole family could enjoy. We basically wanted to be the Pixar of Christian kids' work, of going, the parents are going to enjoy this, the kids are going to enjoy this, and everyone can have fun together. It's been really great. And then we wrote the book to go along with My Lifehouse as well, and that was such a fun project. I worked on that with Natasha Debnam from the UK. She's a fabulous artist, and yeah, I loved it. Still one of my favorite books to read to my kids, as embarrassing as that sounds. And I always look over and they're sitting flicking through the pages, and you're like, wow. Oh gosh. So it's really great.
Yeah. I was going to ask, when you wrote My Lighthouse, the song, when the song was put out, did you have an inkling at the time this might resonate with kids? Because as you pointed out, this has since been sort of sung in schools all over the country here in the UK. And, you know, in hindsight, I guess, that does translate quite well as a kid's song. But at the time of putting it out, did you have any inkling?
None whatsoever. Nope. Turns out that us trying to be the most deep and meaningful that we can be, it seems we resonate with children more than anybody else. So there you go.
It was only until after we brought out the song and we were traveling around all these churches, I was like, there's lighthouses in all of these buildings. There's pictures of lighthouses, there's rugs of lighthouses. I was like, oh.
I would go as far as to say the lighthouse is the biggest secular imaging in the Christian church. Wow. You know, it's huge. Yeah. I guess that's why the song resonated. Who would have known that was the case? We just saw them all at our house and wrote a song about it.
Yes. Amazing. And that song has since gone platinum, which is a massive achievement. Where were you when you got the call or the email telling you that had happened, and what was your reaction?
Gosh, I can't even remember where we were, but I remember Adrian Thompson from Integrity calling us and saying, well, boys, we broke platinum. It was a couple of years ago now. And we were like, what? And speaking of, you know, speaking to some of my American band friends, and, you know, they've had number ones at radio and things like that. And I'm like, surely you guys have one of these on your wall. And they're like, nope, never sold, you know, a million copies of a song. And you're like, whoa, that's, I guess I didn't realize it was such a big deal. So certainly, very encouraging.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Christian unity, of all things. Now, I don't know about you guys, but for me, this is a bit of a scale. On the one hand, I think, fantastic, yes, we need more unity, and I'm very upbeat about it. And then the other part of me just loads up social media, and I think, oh, dear, we've got some way to go, haven't we? Now, you guys, I have also noticed in the Christian world, when you become well-known, the trolls descend. And you guys must have had some experience of this. This is an interesting one for you, though, because you do cross denominations when you play gigs and when you put music out. You've got people from across the different denominations and Christian backgrounds listening to you and enjoying your music. And yet at the same time online, it can seem like Christians are very divided. So how do you square that?
Yeah, I think we certainly are delighted that we aren't affiliated with a specific church. And at certain times I thought that was a negative. You know, everybody talks about being under a covering and being part of a, and it's not that we're not as individuals part of a covering or part of a church, but the fact that we have the ability to play, you know, we played from Billy Graham organization, who we got a lot of trouble with for playing with, to then playing for the Pope in Ireland. We got a lot of trouble for that. We played for, you know, Hillsong out in Australia. We played for the mega churches in the US, and we've gotten trouble for playing with most of them from somebody. Because there's always something negative to say about everyone, but that's not what we do. Is the reason why we do things. I think that's been, it's been a privilege to be part of the body of Christ and not like the arm of Christ or the foot of Christ. And certainly, you know, coming from Northern Ireland, unity is a huge, huge deal. We know what a fractured community is. We know what it is when you build walls, not bridges. We have literal peace walls in Belfast, keeping Protestants and Catholics separate. And when you really break it all down, aren't we just the same people, you know, trying to love the same God? And we've all got different angles on who he is, and we can learn from each other. One of my biggest problems with like short form social media, which is why I'm not really a big Instagrammer, is, sorry, there's my plane being shouted at. I've got to move. One of the things is that you can only talk about something in short sentences. And sometimes a dialogue really is important. I really enjoy, we've started that podcast. We're actually just about to bring out an episode called The Joy of Politics, which you can imagine is going to be very fun. But the long form of conversation, of actually, I've noticed that when people argue online, if they were sitting across a table and they had a cup of tea in their hands and they were sharing some cake, they'd probably be the best of friends.
Yeah.
So I would say that the tribalism and the getting into your own wee clubs and groups and opinions is a huge issue. It's certainly the reason why the prayer that Jesus prayed 2,000 years ago hasn't been answered. It's because we love being in a place of safety with people we trust, don't we? Rather than being in a place where someone might disagree with us, where someone might challenge us, or dialogue is really the only way to go about it.
Yeah. Now, Gareth, I don't want to be the journalist responsible for you missing your flight and not getting back to your wife in Nashville.
Oh, I'm good.
You are currently in an airport waiting for a plane. So if at any point you disappear, please feel free.
I will dash like a young gazelle towards the gate.
I did want to ask you, maybe Ali wants to take this one, but I did want to ask you that about what it was like to play for the Pope, of all people. Not many Protestant bands get to play for the Pope, as I understand it. So tell me a bit about that experience.
It was very, very unique, quite overwhelming as well, you know, being in just outside Dublin, and you would you'd see him driving past in his wee golf cart, you know. You're like, oh, there's the Pope. There he is.
It's not a
there
golf cart, Ali. It's the Pope-mobile.
The Pope-mobile.
The Pope-mobile. Yeah, it was a really special time. You know, obviously we got a lot of flack for it, but like we really do believe in unity. We believe about building bridges. And so it was a real unique opportunity to play our songs, the songs that we've written, like Build Your Kingdom Here, at a real pivotal time for Ireland, with the Pope being there. So it was really special. I mean, it was really raining. It rained the whole time. But of course we're all outside because it's Ireland, really believing for it. But it was I would just say it was a very unique, it did feel quite heavy. Spiritually, it felt like a heaviness on it. But you know, I just really believe God was in that moment and breaking some things through, and really, really encouraging. You know, it was just an incredible moment. So
in what way did it feel heavy?
I think just from the history with Ireland and Catholicism, of what everyone was bringing to that moment. Obviously with all like the scandals that have been coming out, and then they were expecting the turnout to be millions, and then it wasn't as much because of all that. I felt like people were coming very burdened and very heavy, either with disappointments and hurt and let down, and they were looking for answers, I feel like. But so it was a real unique experience to be involved in, and I do feel like we were at the right place at the right time. You know, one of those moments where you're like, I don't understand why we're the only Protestant band in the history probably of Ireland to be playing for the Pope. But I felt as soon as we hit the stage, I was like, this is where we're meant to be at this moment. God's wanting to do something in this nation. And very, very special.
Yeah. You both mentioned how you've had criticism for playing, whether it's playing at Hillsong or for the Pope. How do you handle that on a personal level? Because I imagine there's quite a big difference between people you've never met just commenting on a post. That kind of criticism, I imagine, is quite different to maybe a friend phoning you up and saying, not sure about this. What does the criticism look like, and how have you dealt with it?
Yeah, gosh. I'm a real people pleaser. I kind of want everybody to get along. I don't want mommy and daddy to stop fighting. So it does hit me hard. I don't want to offend anybody. And I always think, oh, there's such a good conversation to have with you about this. But there's, you know, you don't have time for that with everybody. And that's a huge thing that bothers me, is I wish I lie in bed thinking, oh, I wish I could have talked about that more, or I wish that person could have understood, you know, where I was coming from, or why we did that. Like, why did we play for the Pope? You know, the Billy Graham organization was another one where there was huge, huge media issues in the UK because we were doing it. And all we wanted to say was, well, the gospel's for everybody, and we're meant to... You know, I know us not playing would make a statement, but you know what? Us actually playing also makes a statement. And it's complicated. I wish I could just have more time with people to explain why you do certain things, but you don't always get that chance in what we do.
Yeah, and I imagine, especially on social media, like you say, it's very quick, and there's not those opportunities to sit down and have longer conversations with people. And I suppose that is part of the problem, isn't it? That we're not always good at listening to each other.
Well, I was just going to say, I also feel like often the times that people want to criticize you on social media, they don't want a discussion. They just want to say what they want to say, and then they want to leave it. It's not that we don't want to have the discussion a lot of the time. You're like, oh, you just want to make a statement and be negative, and that's what you want to do.
I can relate to that so much. As someone who publishes 2,000 word articles and puts them on Facebook, and someone reads the headline and makes a comment, not based on the 2,000 words, just the headline, I can relate to that. Yeah.
You're like, come on.
Yeah, I would say you might get this even more than we do, Sam. So.
Well, I think we could have a fascinating chat about that, but that's probably a separate podcast for a whole nother day. Thank you both so much for being my guests on the show today. I have so enjoyed catching up with you both and all that you are involved in. Before we go, any hopes and plans for the future? What can we expect from you guys and from Ren Collective going forward?
Well, we are praying that we'll be able to do our shows in the UK in November. And we're praying that those are going to be amazing. It's going to be like an end of pandemic celebration. Yeah. That's our hopes. Things, of course, seem to be going really well. We're also praying that we will get home to our families in Northern Ireland. It's been a long time. And we really spend about one third of our lives in Northern Ireland. As much as we say, you know, we've moved to America, we probably tour in America about one third and then have one third off in America and then, you know, one third in Northern Ireland. So we are can't wait to get home and see our mums.
Definitely. Well, we can't wait to have you back. And when you come and play London, I will be there on the front row. And
yes, you will.
Look forward to partying with you all. But yeah, for now, yeah. Gareth and Ali, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. Such a pleasure.
I'm Sam Howes, and you have been listening to The Profile Podcast. Really hope you enjoyed that interview. There's loads more where that one came from. Over 200 interviews with different Christians from all walks of life available now on The Profile Podcast, and new ones coming each and every week. If you have been enjoying these interviews, we would so appreciate it if you could take just 5 seconds to give us a rating and a review wherever you found this podcast. It helps other people to discover the show. So why not do that now? Give us a rating and a review, and we'll see you next time.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.